Hello everybody. We come to the sixth chapter of our discussion about supply chain and logistics, and this particular chapter is about network integration. Now that's a big word, network integration. To put it simply, we will talk about the chain in the supply chain, how the chain operates and why the chain cannot break. Integration means what? That each loop of the chain should be fixed or intertwined with the other loop. That now if there is a crack somewhere, the integration in the whole network of the supply chain will fall apart. So we will look at what are the risks and what we can do to have a seamless network integration in logistics and supply chain. Now if you look at the supply chain, let's assume an organization which has just started. So you have a blank slate. Let's look, if this is a piece of paper, let's assume nothing is there, it's all blank. Now you have to set up your supply chain, you have to set up your suppliers, you have to set up your manufacturers, you have to set up your warehouses, you have to set up your distributors, you have to set up your whole business chain. Now how do you do that? The geographic placement of production facilities, stocking points, sourcing points is a natural first step in creating a supply chain. So that's the first step, but it's not easy. You just cannot, you know, this is not like a child's play that I pick up this block and I put it there, I pick up another block, I put it here. Everything has to be calculated, everything has to be done so that finally the delivery mechanism of the supply chain is most cost effective yet powerful. The facility location decisions are of great significance to a firm since they represent the basic strategy for accessing customer markets and will have a considerable impact on the revenue, cost and level of service. Although location decisions are primarily strategic, they also have implications at an operational level. So you should not only have the top management strategizing about where I need my plant. It has to be backed up by supply chain prudence. It has to be backed up by statistical calculations, source points, links, sync points, everything has to be calculated. And then you say, I build my plant here because it is raw material is nearby, the customers are nearby, or at least one of these two factors are met, or I have certain tax benefits, it's in a special economic zone, etc. Now Alfred Weber had put in a theory as to how these networks basically exist, how they are established. So what is Weber's system? Alfred Weber generalized location theory consisted of numerous consuming locations spread over a geographical area and linked together by linear weight distance transportation costs. Weber developed a scheme to classify major materials as either ubiquitous or localized. Ubiquitous materials were those which were available at all locations. So, let's talk about water, etc. Localized raw materials consisted of minerals deposits found only at selected areas. On the basis of his analysis, Weber developed a material index. This was the ratio of the local raw material in the weight of the final product. So how much of my bomb, how much of my composition consists of local raw materials, how much of my composition consists of raw materials which come from far away or even have to be imported. Weber generalized that industries would locate facilities at the point of consumption when the manufacturing process was weight gaining and near the point of raw material deposit when the manufacturing process was weight losing. Now, how are the locational decisions taken? The major factors influencing decisions are market and resource availability. So all distribution points at least should be near to the consuming points. The nearer you are to your customer, the better it is. Labor services, you need to set up industry at a place where labor is available, cheaply available, and labor union unrest is minimum. We can refer to the issue that happened in West Bengal some years ago, when the auto major had to, Tata had to shift their factory due to labor issues and certain other issues. From there, it had to move to another state of India because they were not able to operate there. Transport services, it's very important from a logistical perspective that the area where you have in and outflow of material should be conveniently located. Transport facilities should be nearby, and it should, the roads and good network of roads should be available so that big trucks and containers can move in and out. Technology, and finally communication. All these things are important. They need to exist before you set up a particular industry somewhere. Now, what are local facilities? Customers generally are more akin to having production facilities or distribution facilities which is close to their houses. Even if you look at the malls today, people prefer to go to malls which are nearby to their homes. You will not have people traveling, say, a 30 or a 40 kilometer radius just to go to a very, very big mall. If there is a relatively slightly smaller but equally good mall near to his house, he will go there. Now, this psychology is something which is the local presence paradigm. So, customers feel that unless a supplier maintained inventory within a local market area, it would be difficult to provide consistent delivery. This perception, commonly referred as a local presence paradigm, resulted in inventories being maintained at numerous local markets. Now, whether that was correct or not, we cannot say. Most probably it was not efficient. In India, especially because of tax laws and also because customers wanted to be near the market, we have companies keeping warehouses in each geographical state. In bigger states, you have more than one warehouses which are present. However, in the last 70 to 80 years, economic aspects and risks connected with the concept of local presence have been subjected to a lot of revision. In modern ways of transportation, both information technology and principles of economic storekeeping simultaneously induce to reduction instead of to increase in number of distribution warehouses used for service of consumers in this geographical area. Now, the issue is that whether number of warehouses, when the warehouses increase, is it good or is it not good? Now, that is what there are logistics managers and supply chain managers who have to calculate and use simulations to find out. But the more the number of warehouses, there are a lot of inefficiencies which creep up. So, having too many warehouses to be just close to the customers or consumers is not a very good idea. Now, what is basically a warehouse and why is it required? A warehouse is basically required because a company might have few manufacturing facilities, whereas its customers will be spread across the globe. So, you need to have warehouses which can conveniently cater to the demands of the distributors or retailers, etc., within the limits of the customer service policy of the company. So, if a company has a policy that goods need to be delivered within 48 hours, you definitely need number of warehouses or you need a very good transportation network. Warehouse efficiency is a critical success factor to effectively manage the supply chain and achieve the peak performance. Implementation of the latest technologies can significantly improve warehouse operations, employee productivity, and customer satisfaction. Introducing new or improved automation management technology to warehouse can be a powerful tool for increasing competitiveness in a challenging market. So, gone are the days when you just need a warehouse, you need a few pallets and a forklift truck or a driver. Today, you have warehouse management systems, you have the decision on racking system, how many levels of racking, you have modern, ultra-modern material handling equipments which can go up to heights of almost 50 feet, bring out pallets, do a lot of activity in a less polluting environment. So, warehousing itself has undergone a lot of changes. Like warehousing, procurement also has a lot of drivers which we need to know. Procurement, also known as purchasing, is the process of acquiring raw materials, components, products, services, and other resources necessary for the production processes. Procurement drivers center on using warehouses to help purchase materials and components at the lowest total cost. In an effort to develop and support improved working relationship, most firms have reduced the number of suppliers. Now, whether reduction itself is good or you should have a balanced approach, it depends from firm to firm. The logic was to develop a limited number of relationships with suppliers who can operationally be integrated into a firm's supply chain. So, you're saying you have less suppliers, but my relationship with these suppliers will be much more enhanced. I will give them more business. The relationship will be one of a mutual win-win and not a place where I just say give me the lowest cost, and the supplier just gives the lowest cost, earns less money. Finally, the supplier is going to shut down if both the parties do not cooperate with each other. The goal is to eliminate waste, duplication, and unplanned redundancy. This rationale of dynamic working with limited suppliers is based on a cradle-to-grave philosophy. Now, like procurement, there are many drivers in manufacturing also, which induce two types of warehouses: production-focused warehouses, or you have sales-focused warehouses. Production-focused warehouses, these are places where semi-finished products are stored, WIP is stored in these warehouses. These warehouses are created in particular as a result of insufficient synchronization between successive production processes. So, if you have a process by which you create a bulk initially, then it's stored somewhere, then it goes for packing, say, to a third party or in another stage of production, you would need this kind of warehouses. Functions performed by manufacturing focused warehouses, including balancing, sorting, and the security function. What are sales focused warehouses? This is what we will look into more detail because it is more customer facing. Finished parts or component groups are located in sales focused warehouses. Such warehouses are created as a result of strategic production decisions concerning whether and to what extent parts for order related finished products should be produced and temporarily stored before a future order is received. Functions performed by manufacturing warehouses in this case include flexibility, delivery time reduction, and the substitution function. In terms of planning, we need to know of two concepts which affect us. One is the MTO, which is a made-to-order manufacturing strategy, requires supply-facing warehousing support, but little, if any, of demand-facing storage. The made-to-plan manufacturing strategy with focus resources to achieve maximum manufacturing economies of scale require substantial demand facing warehouse capacity. The market distribution drivers. A warehouse located geographically close to customers seeks to minimize inbound transportation cost by maximizing consolidation and length of haul from the manufacturing plants. It generates a faster throughput, more workflow agility in the warehouses, ability to satisfy customer demands while lowering the logistics cost, short outbound movement to the final customer. Now, what is rapid replenishment? A typical retail replenishment order is placed with a wholesaler who sells a variety of different manufacturer products. Location of the warehouse within the market served is justified as the least cost way to rapidly replenish an assortment of inventory to either an end customer or a retailer. What is market-based assemble to order? Assemble to order is a manufacturing strategy where parts and sub-assemblies are produced to stock while the final assembly of products is delayed until the customer orders have been received. So, here we are saying in the market-based ATO that delay the final assembly till the last moment. This is also good for non-assembly based operations wherein you are, suppose you have a product which goes into various packs. You have a small pack, you have a medium pack, you have a large pack. Now, if you pack it into the final product, put your MRP ready for sale, then if the demand shifts from that pack to another pack, you cannot do much. There, if you can keep the material in a bulk state and pack it at the last moment, then you get that additional and extra flexibility. The ATO strategy allows manufacturer to achieve a high degree of product variety and quick product delivery while keeping low inventories. Companies also deploy a strategy known as forward inventory deployment, which ensures that SKUs that account for the majority of the sales revenue are closest to the key market demand points to minimize order turnaround time, which is an important competitive advantage. So, going by the Pareto's rule of 80-20, you will have 20% of your products which will give you 80% of the revenues. In this, the high value products should always be having a slightly higher amount of inventory, because if you lose sales in this particular product, your gross margin and your turnover is very greatly affected. Now, what is the transportation role in this? We are talking about network integration, so it is not possible that we do not talk about transportation here. Transportation economics. Transport economics is a branch of economics. The key to achieving economic transportation is summarized by two basic principles. Firstly, the quantity principle. It is that individual shipments should be as large as the carrier can legally transport in a vehicle. So, don't let your vehicle go under load, because if you have called for a 9-ton truck and if you only put 5 tons in it, you end up paying for 9 ton, whereas you have only sent 5 tons. Of course, if the product is of such volume that only 5 tons can go in a 9-ton truck, then it's a different matter. Otherwise, we should always try to use a vehicle to the maximum possible limit. Tapering principle, it is large shipments should be transported distances as long as possible. Now, what is the justification of a warehouse? When total cost reductions are achievable, the warehouse is economically justified. 5 benefits, economic benefits are consolidation and break bulk, assortment of products, postponement of packing till the last moment till the order is received, stockpiling and inventory, and reverse logistics. So, when goods are returned from customers, they can be first brought to the warehouses before they are sent back for rework. When a warehouse is primarily justified on the service, the supporting rationale is that sales can be increased in part by such logistical performance. So, in case a warehouse doesn't make economic sense initially, but it is such that if you create that warehouse, your sales will be greatly improved, then finally the costing decision is made, because it finally gives way to higher revenue, more profits, and cost is then justified. Warehouses can provide service as a result of spot stocking, full line stocking, product support, and market presence. Allocating cost in a collaborative transportation procurement network. Due to increased pressure to operate more efficiently and satisfy ever increasing demand from customers for better service, companies are forced to realize that suppliers, consumers, and even competitors can be potential collaborative partners. Thus, many companies employ collaborative practices such as group purchasing and capacity and information sharing in order to reduce the system-wide inefficiencies and cut operational costs. A key aspect that affects the carrier's operational cost is asset repositioning. Asset repositioning decreases the capacity utilization of the carrier, which results in an increase in the operational costs of the carrier. Total transportation cost will also initially decline as warehouses are added to the logistical network. The reduction in transport cost results from consolidated volume shipments to the break bulk location, coupled with short haul small shipments to the final destination. So, as we can see, as the number of warehouses increases, the total transportation cost starts to decrease. What's the inventory economics like transportation economics? Inventory is material or resources of any kind having some economic value, either awaiting conversion or use in the future. So, if it is a raw material, it is awaiting conversion into a finished goods in the future. If it is a finished good, it is waiting for a customer demand to be transported and sold to the final user. Inventory is a key determinant of profitability, because Inventory is your working capital block. So if you have very, very high inventory, obsolete inventory, then goods getting expired, your profitability will be negatively impacted. Inventory velocity turns assets into profits. The faster the inventory turns, the greater the profitability, greater the efficiency of the company. So we need to understand as to what is the role and importance of inventory in the supply chain network. Inventory is critical to supply chain management because it directly impacts both cost as well as service. So it's a very critical element. Not only does the lack or excess of inventory have impact on your sales, it also has a very big financial impact. Inventory typically generates an incremental cost of 20-40% per year for the company. Inventory carrying cost or inventory handling cost is roughly about 14-15% per annum for all organizations. Improper management of inventory leads to slow growth and puts pressure on profitability. Thus, companies aim at improving the efficiency of the inventory cycle. So, inventory turnover time is very important. How many times did the particular material turn over in a particular year? Higher the turns, the better is the functioning of the company. Today, inventory investment is viewed as a supply chain cost driver rather than as a material asset. Thus, a lean supply chain operating on ERP, which has MRP, just-in-time systems, are preferred to ensure maximum inventory turns, reduction of the cost on inventory investment, enhancement of the bottom line and the ROI. Now, the one question which a layman or somebody who is not really attuned to this subject might ask is, why do you need to have inventory? If you have order, if you can produce that and supply it to your customer, then that's ideal, right? But in practical world, it doesn't happen. A person walks into a store, he sees a product, he wants that. If it is not available, then the sales is lost and your competitor might gain. Now, to reduce all that, you need to have inventory because demand forecast is very uncertain, is very variable. In order to get over the uncertainties in demand and supply, goods need to be kept in stock. This is because the cycle of production and consumption never matches and will never match. Inventory level in a logistical system directly relates to the location of the network. The forward deployment of inventory in a logistical system potentially improves the service response time. So, the closer the spare parts and the components are to the market, the more flexible and the more quicker you can react to customer demands. Such deployment also increases the overall system inventory, resulting in greater costs and risk. Now, inventory can be broken down into the base stock, the safety stock, and the in-transit stock. Let's look at what these are individually. The base stock, it's the minimum inventory that must be maintained in order for a business to operate with maximum efficiency. So, it's the minimum quantity, that if it goes beyond this, you will immediately trigger a reorder. Sometimes it is known as normal stock. The idea is to keep the inventory as small as possible, thus reducing storage expenses and tax liabilities. Now, safety stock, it is that stock that is kept on hand as a buffer in the event of an unexpected problem with supply or an increase in demand. Now, what is an unexpected? So, this has got two folds. One is your incoming material, which was supposed to replenish this your base stock, got delayed. There was an issue with the production plan. It could not happen. So, then if you do not have this safety stock, then you will not be able to meet the market demand on time. So, it's better to have this. On the other hand, assuming that your incoming materials came in on time, but your customer who was supposed to order, forecast was for 10, suddenly ordered for 13. Do you have those 3 units additionally? If you do not have, then you lose that 3 sales. So, it's better to have this safety stock. But again, safety stock has to be mathematically calculated. It cannot be a gut feeling. It cannot be an intuitive number. In transit inventory, these goods are typically the goods being sold from one company to another. Goods in transit belong to the party holding legal ownership. Goods sold on FOB does not belong to the purchaser until they arrive at their final destination, whereas in the case of CIF, it's the reverse. The party holding a legal possession is not the legal owner. The person with the physical possession is known as the consignee of the goods. The consigned goods belong in the inventory of the consigner at times. The consignee is responsible for taking care of the goods and trying to sell them to an end customer. The consigner is the party holding a legal ownership to the title of the goods. Now, another important thing is average inventory cost minimization. Average inventory is the median value of an inventory through a certain period of time. So it's the total opening plus ending divided by 2. Now, another important feature of inventory management is understanding the DOH, the days on hand, that how many days equivalent material do you have with you in stock. So at times, logistics managers calculate the coverage. So you list down all your products, you calculate the closing inventory and see how many months of sale does that closing inventory relate to. So if I have 10 units, if I have say 5,000 units and my sales for the next 2 months is 5,000 itself, that means you are carrying 2 months forward inventory cover with you, which might not be ideal. You can do with less also there. Then we come to the total network cost. When there are few warehouses in the network, fixed warehousing costs are low, but the transportation costs are high. As warehouses are added to the network, the fixed costs increase, but the transportation costs are reduced. Initially, because the distances etc. come down, you have less movements, you have more stock at the primary points etc. Another thing that helps in supply chain management decision making is the concept of ABC analysis. ABC analysis allows inventory managers to segregate and manage the overall inventory into three major categories. You have the A, B and C. The A category items generally represent approximately 15 to 20% of the overall inventory by item, but represent 80% by terms of value. So these are expensive material which account for a lot in terms of value. B category items represent 30 to 35% of the inventory items and about 15% by value. C category items represent 50% of the actual items but only 5% of the inventory value. So if you look at the ABC, so see this, much emphasis is placed on the items of A in order to minimize inventory investment. See, this goes up. Here, total quantity of unsold inventory, the items of B are under control as an immediate category between A and C. So an ABC analysis simply gives you the prioritization. So if you can do even some improvement in the A category, you will have a lot of impact on your inventory value. However, even the C category materials, although they are of less value, they occupy a lot of space, they occupy unnecessary warehousing space. So they also should not be ignored. Another important concept here is the concept of EOQ, the economic order quantity. It is that size of the order which gives maximum economy in purchasing any material and ultimately contributes towards maintaining the materials at the optimum level and at the lowest ordering cost. So the EOQ is the quantity to be ordered at a given time and must be determined by balancing two factors. The factors are the cost of processing or the cost of issuing the purchase order and the cost of acquiring or ordering the material. So it's basically EOQ is equal to 2 into A, where A is the demand for the year, into CP, the cost to place a single order, divided by CH, cost to hold one unit of inventory for a year, and the square root of this is the EOQ. Cost minimization is something that needs not be told in great detail, because we know that in supply chain and in logistics, cost minimization is a very, very important strategy. A strategy of least total cost seeks a logistical system network with the lowest fixed and variable costs. A system designed to achieve at least total cost is driven purely by cost-to-cost trade-offs. The overall level of customer service associated with any given least total cost system design is referred to as the threshold service level. So, to do away, you are basically demolishing whatever cost items that we can find on and which can be reduced. Now, a threshold service is the minimum number of people needed for a service to be worthwhile. So, it's basically the market survey, it's basically the study of the market before you decide to expand to a particular geographical area or city. In geography, a threshold population is the minimum number of people necessary before a particular goods or service can be provided. The theory relied upon two concepts, threshold and range. Threshold is the minimum market needed to bring about the selling of a particular goods and the willingness of consumers to travel a given distance to purchase the particular goods. Range, on the other hand, is the maximum distance consumers are prepared to travel to acquire a particular product. Now, what is sensitivity analysis? Sensitivity analysis is very useful when attempting to determine the impact the actual outcome of a particular variable will have if it differs from what was previously assumed. The threshold service resulting from the least total cost logistical design provides a basis for sensitivity analysis. Locational modification. Warehouse location is a long-term decision and is influenced by many quantitative and qualitative factors. The main criteria taken into account for deciding on a warehouse is the cost, the labor availability, infrastructure, especially transportation infrastructure, and the markets. There are some other criteria in warehousing which are like tax incentive and tax structures, availability of labor, quality and reliability of modes of transportation, and finally, most importantly, the proximity. If you have everything, if you have good road network, you have good transportation, cheap labor, but you are 2000 miles away from your customer, then it's an useless thing to have a warehouse there. The relationship between uncertainty and required inventory is called the portfolio effect. It can be estimated by using the square root rule. The square root rule suggests that the safety stock increase, the result of adding a warehouse, is equal to the ratio of the square root of the number of locations in the newly prepared network divided by the square root of the number of existing locations. Put it simply, number of warehouses increases, your stock levels will go up by about 15 to 20%. So, if you are having 100 units in inventory A, you have now inventory B, you are most likely to hold about at least 20%. More. Now, in all this integrative approach, in all the system integration networks, etc., it's important to measure performance. Without measuring performance, we will not know where the lacuna is, where the company needs to look into and improve. It's similar to the SCORE model. So, we have to analyze, debottleneck the whole supply chain, reassemble it, and look at places where improvement is necessary. The most common warehouse performance measures include handling productivity, optimum space utilization, inventory count accuracy, damage management, service levels, cost and inventory. Now, what is handling productivity? It's often measured in units or lines picked per hour or total handling cost per unit. Space utilization is evaluated based on the percentage of total space available for storage and storage per unit of the product. Accuracy includes measures of location and record accuracy, the percentage of items picked correctly, and the percentage of orders which have been picked correctly. Damage measurements include percentage of items that are undamaged when received by the customer out of the total material that has been sent. Service level measures include fill rate, which is based on the number of orders that were filled completely. Cost and inventory performance measures include total distribution center per unit handled, distribution center cost as a percentage of sales, and the inventory turnover. Now, what is the impact of increasing order frequency on safety stock? In the continuous review setting, to increase order frequency, the order quantity has to be reduced. This will increase ordering costs and reduce inventory costs. Increasing orders in this setting has no impact on the chances that stock out will occur or not occur in a particular order cycle. In the periodic review setting, it also reduces inventory if safety stock is ignored. Increasing the frequency of orders reduces the time between orders and so reduces the variability of the demand. So, here we basically studied how the integrated network delivers the result for the supply chain organization, how globalization we read in the last chapter has, you know, put the challenges up various levels. So now they are even more difficult to handle, but with a network which is integrated, this can easily be handled. We need to focus on the warehousing part of it, focus on transportation, look at good planning systems to finally deliver the customer orders at the most optimum cost in the supply chain network. Thank you.